I am at SPIEF, and as you can see, you can't see me because there are so many people here. This is really an amazing place. As a matter of fact, when you think about SPIEF, and I know we've made the comparison to Davos, I think one of the things that I'm coming away with this year is that there's more of a Western representation than there has been in the past. As a matter of fact, what we're seeing is that there's a lot of people here from even the United States. That's important because they wouldn't be here if they were afraid to be here or if they didn't have some kind of signal or okay, for example, from the White House that they can be here. So, you know, that's important. As a matter of fact, you know what I'm seeing over there? Bob Agee. Bob Agee's an American. He represents American interests here, and he's surrounded right now, as far as I can tell, by reporters who want to get his perspective on things. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go see if I can grab Bob, not go in there and talk with all those other reporters, because I don't want to do that. I'm not a big fan of that type of journalism where you got 20 microphones in somebody's face. I'm going to go see if I can have a one-on-one with Bob so I could share it with you, because I think he's got his finger on the pulse of what is the future of the U.S.-Russia relationship from a business standpoint. So let me see if I can grab Bob, okay? Bob, oh my God, thanks so much.
Good to see you, Rick.
So good to see you.
Yeah, what a surprise.
Thanks for letting me grab you. This is really important that we have this discussion. I'm so glad to see you here.
Mir Tesen, as we say, small world.
Yeah, it is, it is. Hey, what do you think of this? I mean, people are comparing this to Davos. Is it Davos or is it Davos Plus?
Oh, I think it is the Russian equivalent of Davos, has always been. It's pretty spectacular. I mean, you look at some of the stands and some of the things going on here. It's quite remarkable what's on show.
You know what I was thinking yesterday when I was making the comparison and talking to my audience? I was thinking that it's better than Davos because in Davos you get multimillionaires and billionaires.
That's true.
Who fly in private jets.
That's true.
And I'm not really sure they give a crap about most of the people that they represent as much as they do their own wallets. And that's not to say that there's not going to be some greedy people here too.
Right.
But it just seems like the emphasis here is more on creating deals that benefit the countries where these leaders and these business people come from. My take. Am I full of crap?
Well, no, I think you're probably right. I mean, Davos is kind of the elite get together of the, you know, top executives and so forth. That's true. I mean, Russia, SPIEF was always created to be the Russian answer to SPIEF, to Davos. So, you know, but deals are made. I mean, there's going to be a lot of deals made here. A lot of American companies have come this year. So I think we've got two very important dialogues going on, a cultural dialogue for the first time.
And how important is that, by the way? You just mentioned something really interesting about the Americans and maybe the West. The Americans more than the West, because the Europeans, I think they're still like, I'm not going to go there. Those people are dirty. So what we see here is, you know, a lot of the global South community. We see Turkey. We see Indonesia.
Yes.
We see the Persian Gulf states. We see, obviously, you know, China represented and India represented.
True.
So it's the other part of the world that is gaining its own huge strength. Wouldn't it be super smart for our people to come here?
Well, first of all, we do have quite a few companies here. That's number one, more than in the last couple of years.
Really?
So there's an increase in American presence here, that's for sure.
That's big, right?
That's good. I mean, not to the point where it was 5 years ago or 6 years ago, but still an increase. There's some big companies, in our business dialogue, there'll be some big companies on the panel. So I think, you know, look, companies are still very, you know, under the radar. They're still very, you know, concerned about reputational risk.
Yeah.
They're still very concerned about, you know, making some comment that gets, you know, misquoted in the press and so forth. So it's understandable that they want to kind of keep a low profile, generally speaking. But as you say, you know, it's kind of time, I think Secretary of State Rubio mentioned it's kind of time to move on.
Yes.
And it's time to get back. And, you know, businesses, you know, the majority of our businesses haven't left, right? This is also kind of a misnomer where all the businesses have left. You know, the Yale Business School you know, study.
They're like in waiting.
Yeah, no, but they're here. I mean, we have $100 billion of investment in Russia, American companies.
$100 billion
of investments. We've got companies with, you know, multiple factories, tens of thousands of employees. Those companies are not just going to leave.
So what are they doing then, Bob? Are they, they're here kind of waiting for the sanctions to kind of get pulled so they can go back in and be more active in the running of the corporations?
Well, first of all, the companies that are here are still running as if, you know, as always. They have their factories, they have their businesses, they do business as normal.
But why do we see the big brands being traded over to Russians, like the McDonald's and the Burger King?
So some companies, you know, sold their brands to Russian entities. The McDonald's example, where a Russian entity took over the exiting American brand, created its own brand.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of the big companies, for example, you know, Ernst & Young left, it became B1.
Mm.
But, you know, the people stayed, but the brand changed, right? So there's that. A lot of the big companies who left, I know, are, you know, watching and evaluating the situation. I'm in contact with many of them.
Yeah.
And they're, like you said, waiting for the right moment, for sanctions to be lifted, for a green light from Washington. And, you know, we're working also on a lot of that. But, you know, until that happens, until that, you know, moment occurs, that, you know, a lot of the companies are still sitting in the States watching and waiting.
It seems to be an opportunity that they all want to grasp, but are afraid to or can't for legal reasons.
Right.
I talked to some people in the energy business here in Russia, which, as you know, is the foremost business in terms of hydrocarbons in the entire world. And they tell me, the CEOs tell me, we get calls all the time from the biggest oil companies in the world dying to get back together with us. And we have constant contact.
Yes.
Yeah. We can't tell you what the contact is or what the conversations are, Rick, but just know that they're talking.
Yeah.
How important is that?
Oh, it's very important. I mean, look, dialogue is critically important. I mean, there's been such a lack of dialogue over the past 4 years. It's been bad. I mean, especially on the diplomatic level.
Yeah. During Biden administration.
During the Biden administration. A huge improvement since President Trump took office, no question about that. But I think, look, the companies are in touch. They're watching to see what's happening. And I think, look, stepping back, big picture, you know, the U.S. and Russia have to figure a way to reengage.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. Why is that important? What does Russia have? Russia has commodities. Russia has hydrocarbons. Russia has aluminum, right? Russia has fertilizer. So all the things that we
see... Timber.
Yeah. So all the things that we see going up dramatically in price in the United States, which is what? Causing inflation, which is causing interest rates to go up.
Mm.
The source of a lot of those products are in Russia, and Russia has surplus capacity. Who benefited the most from the situation? The Chinese. They had to get their quote-unquote strategic partnership, they're getting 20-30% discounts on all of those products being sold to China.
Same as India. Yeah.
Whereas the United States, the exact opposite has taken place. Fertilizer prices have gone up, aluminum prices have gone up, hydrocarbons have gone up, gasoline prices, all of which have gone up. And you can't have an unstable Middle East and cut Russia off from the world economy. If you do those two things simultaneously, you're going to get what you got.
If you've just seen the latest CPI numbers, it makes your case. I mean, Americans are getting hit hard now. Consumer products are through the roof.
I think President Trump, you know, fundamentally, from what we heard in a lot of his speeches, understands that the United States and Russia are kind of natural strategic partners.
Yes.
Economically.
Yes.
I know we'll always have our geopolitical issues, but, you know, fundamentally, what America needs to run its economy is produced in Russia.
But I'll give you an example of something else that you failed to mention, but I think you're all over as well. Yeah. It's about 140 million consumers here who love American products.
Sure.
I was just on the way in today, and I was talking to my driver about this, and they were pointing to some Chinese manufacturing plants here and places where they keep the Chinese vehicles. And Russians tend to look at Chinese vehicles and go, they see an American car, that's what
love,
I want.
They love American.
Products.
Sure.
And it's we're biting off our nose to smite our face, right?
Sure.
I mean, an opportunity.
I mean, look, what happened with the automobile industry should be written up as a case study. As to what not to do.
Stupidity.
So sanctions. So we imposed the sanctions, right? The car companies left, and what happened? The people, certain business schools thought everything would collapse.
Yeah.
It just shifted to the east, right? Overnight, what was 70% market share for Western brands like Chevrolet, like Ford, like BMW and Mercedes, it's now 70% Chinese. So we literally gave the entire auto market to the Chinese for free, literally for free. All the dealerships, all the engineers, all the training, all the facilities and factories all went to the Chinese for free. I mean, you want to call that stupid? Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with you. That's pretty stupid.
You know, business is, you're a business guy, and I'm a business guy. And I've always realized business is about conversations, communications, and dialogue. You got to talk to people.
Yes.
The whole idea in recent years in our country, maybe in the last decade or so, where we've basically used the law to avoid dialogue with sanctions and all these other things that we do and freezing assets and stuff, it doesn't seem to be in our best interest. When did this get away from us in this fashion? And should guys like you, and I know you are, it's not just you, it's all my friends in the United States who are business people, who look at the government and say, you're strangling us.
Yeah.
You're getting in our way.
Well, it's a philosophical kind of discussion about sanctions. I know we had an event in Washington, I think it was last year, where one of the guys who was a retired guy from the State Department who was in charge of sanctions, we raised this issue. I mean, sanctions aren't working. It's giving the markets to the Chinese. It's just diverting trade away from the West and the United States towards the Chinese, who are, the adversary of the United States. And then, but he said, look, we understood that they're not effective, generally, but there's no other tool in our toolbox. There's war, military action, and there's sanctions, and that's it. So when you can't do A, what's left to do? You're being called upon to do something, so you reach into the toolbox.
Yeah.
But as
but it's like using a screwdriver when you need a hammer, or vice
right,
versa.
It's the wrong thing. And
because you and I both know they don't work.
They work. They create unintended consequences.
Correct.
They create unintended consequences. As I said, what they've really heard, they've heard American business. We've lost hundreds of billions of dollars in foregone trade, in lost profits, in lost market share as a result of this. But I will say, a lot of the companies who left, that did have to leave, they left not because they wanted to leave, because they had to leave because of the rules and regulations. So I think, when things ultimately get settled, and I believe they will get settled soon, I think a lot of those companies will want to come back, which is good. And this year, as I said, we have two dialogues going on. We've got the ongoing commercial dialogue, American companies, Russian people, the dialogue, and we also, for the first time, have the cultural dialogue. And, we were very proud of the fact that Rodney Mims Cook, the president of the American Society of Fine Arts.
He's here.
We invited him, and he got permission to come, and he's here.
When you say he got permission to come, I mean, does it
he
come
got
from
permission,
the, all,
he,
from the White
from,
House?
From the boss. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of significant.
That is significant.
Because, thinking back, that's not something Obama or Biden or many other presidents would have allowed.
It certainly wouldn't have happened within the Biden administration.
No.
But it does say something. I think it sends a signal to say that, look, we want to have the dialogue. We want to try to find, ways that there's communication going on between the two countries where we can cooperate. I think that's a great step.
Well, there are other signals, though, right, Bob? I mean, what the president did with Belarus, what the president has done with the oil companies by lifting the restrictions on sanctions and giving them a waiver because he knows that Russian oil is an important commodity right now.
Yeah. Those are important signals, I think, also. I think the waiver is more I wouldn't maybe go to the point where it's a signal of rapprochement. I think it's more a signal that we got to keep prices down. And so, to the point we made earlier, Russia is too big of an entity not to bring in to the discussion when the Gulf is shut down, when the Strait of Hormuz is shut down. So you have to have Russia supplying oil.
What do you
it is a good signal.
The signals are good from Washington.
Yeah.
You and I both agree on that. And I think when you have conversations with people in the United States, I know people in my industry, when I talk to Tucker and Candace and people who I work
Who's here, by the way? Candace is here.
Candace Owens is here.
Yes.
I might just have a conversation with her at some point here.
Best regards.
Very soon.
Yeah.
But when I talk to people in the United States, they kind of get it. But Europeans, on the other hand, seem to not get it. What do you tell your European friends about?
I think our European
friends are
also kind of frustrated that that their governments are not getting more engaged and seeking a dialogue.
It's like they want a war with Russia. Why?
Yeah. Listen, I'm
because Russia doesn't want a war with them, as far as I can tell.
Like you said, I'm just a simple business guy. I'm a business association. I don't represent the government. But you know, I think the important thing to say is that you know you've got to have dialogue. You're not going to solve a problem unless you sit down and talk to people, right? And certainly, I could see that you know with Rodney Cook being here, he had so many great friends.
Yes.
And the fact that he's here and he got such a you know tremendously warm reception was really really touching. And I think if we and by the way at our lunch yesterday at the monastery where he presented an icon from the United States and received an icon back from the monastery. And there was a gentleman from Germany who was also in charge of cultural events. He says, look, we want to try to get this going as well. So there are people inside of Europe who don't agree with their governments. Let's put it that way. They do want to start to establish things like that. I know the Japanese had also a cultural exchange going on between Russia and the States. So it is starting. I think culture, sports, events like this are a great way to begin because it's something nobody should disagree with. Right?
Yeah.
Humanitarian issues, cultural issues, I think that's the way to get going. Business will follow.
You've been here now how long?
Too long. I've been here for, I came here when Gorbachev was in power.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were one of the original group of people from the United States.
Yeah, I ran Xerox at the time. Yeah.
You were a big executive at Xerox.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were here, and it was very positive at the beginning,
right? Oh, yeah.
Right?
It was fantastic.
A gorgeous relationship.
By the way, Bob Forsman is here at our business panel. He was one of also the original wave of businessmen who came in to invest in Russia. He's on the panel tomorrow.
But you're an interesting case. You're from California.
Yep.
But you're from Northern California.
Correct.
Around the Russian River area.
Correct. From Russian the Russian community of the Bay Area. That's right. That's
a lot of Americans don't know that we have a huge community.
We have a huge Russian community in California. A beautiful cathedral in San Francisco and in Berkeley. And, of course, like you say, there's a lot of Russian history in that regard. By the way, we're going to... Mr. Cook is actually going to see the Fabergé collection in St. Petersburg.
There's
a lot of history between, I would say, Northern California and Russia. That's true.
So no better person to ask this question of then. What is the potential of the Russian experience from a business standpoint? What is it? Maybe I should ask the question this way. What is it about Russians that you think makes them fertile ground for this type of relationship and friendship and business community to expand?
Well, first of all, look, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of our American colleagues don't know this, but, you know, there's a lot of similarities between Russians and Americans.
Yeah, I've
seen. If you look at just the way we interact with each other and so forth, when Americans come here and see the country and interact, they say, well, this is pretty much, you know, what I'm used to.
Yeah, you feel like you're in Minnesota or Wisconsin.
Right, they're very hospitable. You know, obviously, you need to approach business the way, you know, everybody does anywhere in the world. You come in, you have your right team, you engage in the right way. But, you know, Russia is a huge opportunity for the United States. There's no question. I mean, space, you know, the technology that exists and the people, you know, who else are you going to cooperate with in space? Trillions of dollars of opportunity there.
Yeah.
Aviation. Russia was always a huge partner and customer for American aviation technology. machinery and supplies, gas turbines, hydrocarbons, as we've talked about, all these things. So Russia and the United States make great strategic partners. And the people, as you know, having lived here, you know, half my life, you know, it's clear that, you know, you can do business with Russians. You have to know how to approach it, just like you did if you went to Saudi Arabia or to China. Every society is slightly different, has its own nuances.
But I find the Russian mentality to be very serious. And very disciplined.
Yes.
Very rule-oriented. They don't finagle like we do, by the way.
Yeah.
They're different than us in that sense.
Right.
They you know, these are the rules, and we're going to play by the rules.
Yeah.
And I find that to be healthy. You know what you get when you're going in.
That's true.
You know, I'm Hispanic.
Right.
So for us, it's a long conversation over rum, and then eventually you come up with a solution.
Right.
Here, it's not so much that way. I think they tend to be very disciplined about what they do and the way they approach things.
I think you're right. I think it's all good.
Good for business, I believe.
I saw a Russian businessman runs one of the biggest apparel facilities in Russia, and his family lives in Miami, by the way.
Is that right?
Yeah, American citizens. Huh. So, you know, there's a lot of that going on. No, I think you're right. Look, I mean, it's pretty easy to understand how the country operates, how it works. As I said, we have businesses that have been here, you know, 30 plus years. They've got deep roots. They've been very, very successful. I haven't, you know, it's really hard to think of any American corporate story that isn't regarded here as a success. You know, I don't want to mention names, but they're all big entities, well-known, well-liked companies and brands and so forth. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, once you get in and understand how the market operates, it's an easy place to do business.
You know what it is too, Bob? I think there's a sense of optimism in this place. Like, in America, when I read, because it was before my time and your time, even though long in the tooth as we are, after World War II, America went through a really tough time, and yet it found itself and it became optimistic because it was like, we got through that, and now we're on the way.
Right.
I don't think we feel that way so much anymore in America, but I do see it here. I feel like I get a sense from the Russians. We got through the 90s.
Right.
We can take on anything
now. Right,
right. They're ready.
Right.
I mean, this place is ripe.
Well, so it's, you know, one thing about Russia is you go through crises every 5 years. You know, we went through the 98 financial crisis. That was a big meltdown, and it came back roaring. You know, so this is a crisis. It's going to get through. It's a pretty major geopolitical crisis. But you're right. I mean, the opportunities for business is massive here.
Yeah.
I mean, energy, one really important takeaway, which I say to a lot of the people who are in energy-intensive industries, like the cheapest energy in the world is here.
Yeah.
The cheapest electricity in the world is here. You could do deals, you know, whereas we have in the West, you know, a deficit of electricity supply, and it's costly.
Yeah.
Here is the opposite. They've got a surplus of electricity, and it's cheap.
I told my wife, we were talking the other day, because I keep an apartment, obviously, here in Moscow. And she goes, so what's your bill? I said, like, $60?
Yeah, like, my wife was...
$650 in the United States.
California, I mean, I keep my temperature in California at 65 and it's $600. Here, my house is heated at 75 in the winter.
It's like it's almost free.
It's a big house. And my wife goes, oh, it's really expensive, you know, gas bill. I got, like, it was, like, $200. I go, $200 to heat this house in winter at 75? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It would be like $2,000 in the United States.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Don't complain.
Right. Right. Yeah. It makes a big difference.
It does a big difference.
So you've got a good feeling about what... it was disheartening to come in today and see the smoke from another one of the oil refineries or one of the oil depots that's been hit by the Ukrainians. It seems like this war has now turned into a situation where it looks like the Russians are winning on the battlefield, so the Ukrainians are trying to do other things to grab headlines, and it works, you know. Unfortunately, they've hit a school, and now they've hit, you know.
By the way, great reporting that you did in Lugansk again. It was very good reporting.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, that
was really nice.
Yeah.
So it's looking like we're getting to a turning point in this thing where it should be settled, and I think that's going to be the most... Once that gets settled, I think it's...
Well, look, I think President Trump would really like to have it settled. I think maybe back to the point, why is he, you know, why did he allow, you know, Mr. Cook to come to Russia? I think he's trying to send, you know, message that we want to help get this relationship repaired, and we want to, but on the other hand, we want to get this situation fixed. I think he's done a lot behind the scenes to try to get that actioned.
But despite what the Europeans want, which is important.
Unfortunately, it takes a lot of people to get together to get it done. One of the questions I asked on our panel last night, we had a really good discussion last night with a lot of Russian and American officials, and I said, can there be a peace agreement without the Europeans? Can we just have a peace agreement, keep the Europeans out?
That's a great question.
And there was this thing probably saying you could get an agreement. Whether what happens afterwards is a different story. But, you know, the answer was kind of possibly. Then the other question is, can you get an agreement without Congress? Because what role does Congress play?
Yeah.
Even if the Trump administration wants to do a deal, how is Congress going to interfere with that deal?
Yeah.
And what does November mean to all this? So there's a lot of moving parts. But yeah. I do agree with you. I sense, you know, look, everything comes to an end eventually.
Yeah.
All conflicts come to an end. It's not going to be a 100 years war, and I think this will get to its end simply because Russia has already achieved its military objectives. So I think it hopefully ends soon.
Final point on this, and it's a fine point, but I think an important point. The longer we wait to do what Bob Agee has been asking people to at least consider, the more entrenched that relationship between China and Russia becomes. Not because it's a negative relationship. Good for them that they have good relations and are able to get along. The fact is, the more they become entrenched, the harder it will be for us to get in there and want to offer them something they don't already have.
Yeah.
Do you get my drift?
No, sure. Look, I mean, the longer you lose a market, the harder it is to get it back. But having said that, to your point that you raised earlier, Russians love American brands.
Yeah.
They love American technology.
They still do.
And they don't want...
And our music and our culture.
Everything. And the culture, very important.
You're going to a mall, all you hear is American songs.
And they don't want to be overly dependent on China either.
Yeah.
So what's this situation has created, I think, an over-dependence on China, which I think Russia wants to kind of, if it could, pull out of.
Mm.
Not, I wouldn't say eliminate,
no.
But it would like to diversify. I for all the business people I've talked to, they're all, you know, happily waiting for return of American businesses that have left, no question. And I think the Russian government would treat, you know, most of those companies with respect and would welcome them back.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. And I think that's really, really important. And I hope your words, because you're a wise man, you're an experienced man, you've been here, you've lived it. And I hope people, you know, there are tens of millions of people who are going to watch this conversation that you and I have around the world, including, thank God, in the United States and in the UK and in Europe and in Canada and Australia. And that's where I get a lot of mail from people saying, you give us a perspective we've never even considered because we don't get that in the media.
Right, that's
true.
So
I am so glad that I was able to catch up with you and you were able to share this with people.
Good to see you.
Thank you,
Bob. Keep on the good reporting, buddy.
You're a good man,
Bob. Good to see you.
Thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yes.
Bye-bye.